Welcome to Talk Write Done, the show where we talk about everything you need to know about writing for your coaching or educational business. Whether your work in progress is a blog post, an article, or a book, here you'll find the inspiration, motivation, and expertise you need to help you succeed. I'm your host, writing coach, editor, and applied linguist, Dr. Lissy Tangi, and I'm dedicated to helping business owners like you harness the power of the written word to reach more people and transform more lives. If you've ever wanted to get a fresh pair of eyes on your blog post, or you're worried about sending your social media posts out into the world, then a proofreader or proof editor might be what you need. This is the first of two episodes where I invite you to meet my accountability buddies. As you'll know, growing a business can be a lonely endeavor, and I found it invaluable to lean into a community of like-minded entrepreneurs for support. In this episode, I'm excited to introduce you to one of my business accountability buddies, proofreader and proof editor Nazneen Chowdhury. Nazneen works with entrepreneurs who want to share their knowledge and have an impact. She works on various formats ranging from social media to long-form online content, business documents, and self-publications. Her services include proofreading, content writing support, and self-publishing services. Nazneen and I chat about the types of document that a proofreader or proof editor can help with, adapting services to meet client needs, and the importance of finding an editing or proofreading professional who suits your working style. Thank you so much for joining me, Nazneen. You're the first proofreader and proof editor I've had on the show, so I'm excited to chat to you.
Thank you, Lizzie. Thanks for having me.
No problem. And okay, could you give us then a quick overview of how you work with entrepreneurs and how you came to do this work?
Right, so I work with entrepreneurs that sell services, so not so much retail. They're usually experts at what they do, and they are people who work with local communities, and it just happens I know quite a lot of people who do that, and we're all in the same point in our lives where we're setting ourselves up and creating our own hustles. And what a lot of them seem to have in common is that they're not very confident at writing, but they're not very confident in using social media. They might use it personally, but they don't know how to really use it to help their businesses. And I just sort of slid into this. It just all coincided really well. So that's how I came to work with entrepreneurs.
That sounds really similar to my journey as well, actually. And I know we met because we were in the same editing group, part of the CIEP. Just a bit of background for listeners, Nazneen and I actually have an editing accountability group with another editor. Yes. So we meet regularly and talk about our businesses. But just that setting up and then realizing that what you've got to offer a lot of people in our situation actually need. So.
Yeah. I thought I'd start proofreading books and business documents for companies, but I came to realize that local businesses and people, just ordinary people like us, you know, they need help, and I enjoy that interaction. I enjoy helping people, and this really works for me. So this is my business model.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. And so on the show before, I've talked about different types of editing, you know, developmental editing and copy editing. Could you tell us where proofreading and proof editing fits into this? I know people have kind of slightly different terms, but what is it exactly that you do, and how do you define that? Because all editors have their different ways of defining things and what they do for people.
Yeah. So in order to meet people's needs, I've created different services. So proofreading is really useful for businesses when they're pretty good at their messaging. They just want people to look over their work before it goes out online. So when we say publishing, we're talking about online publishing. It could be on packages, it can be product listings, and as well as books, ebooks. It just means anything that's really out there. So that's the proofreading side. And in terms of the proof editing, it's more interventionist. So what's happened is, with the rise of ebooks and what have you, a lot of people are independent writers, and they can't afford copy editors and all the different levels of editing. So you've ended up with a bit of a mishmash. And so this is now called proof editing. It's usually for online work and ebooks. So what I've ended up offering is helping people to structure their writing. People tend to only be able to talk to one type of audience when they actually need to talk to several, and they need help adjusting their writing and refocusing their language. Yeah, so what I found is I've developed these services to try and fit the needs of my clients. And what they're asking, I find, is as I work with them at first, they just want to proofread, but actually their work needs so much more intervention. And I will often say, I'm just on a proofread, but these are some other, I've provided some other comments. And then they'll tend to come back and say, well, what should I do then? Or what do you suggest? And so what I just now offer is a proof edit. And when I see the sample, I'll say, you actually need a proof edit. And this is what I'll do for you. And they tend to like it. And so actually, for me, there is, I do offer proofreading, but often I'm proof editing. And that's what I do. Because we already have a trust and an understanding, I've grown to know their businesses really well. I've actually started helping people create books. I even format books. I've even designed a couple of books. I've ended up creating a whole package of doing everything, or I hire people to do these things for them. So I'm a project manager for them as well in the whole book creation process. So yeah, I've gone from being a proofreader to now creating quite a range of services to suit the needs of clients as they develop their confidence in how and what they want to produce.
It's so interesting, isn't it, when you start working with clients on one thing, and then you develop your services to fit in around what they actually need. Oh, fantastic. So you're talking about the different the different ways that they need to write for different contexts and different audiences. Would you mind telling me a bit more about that?
Yeah, so I work with people, I call them experts, and what they're used to doing is maybe talking to funders, and their language and their writing style is all catered for the funder, and it could be very technical. They're using stats and they're using references, but then when they're trying to write to the people that they're serving, the people that they're really trying to reach, it doesn't work. It just jars. People aren't going to understand. It's not accessible. And so as a proofreader, proof editor, whatever you want to call it, I think we're really in a good place to help people direct their writing and just make that switch to help them focus on the reader, not really like just getting them to imagine what this reader really needs to hear in the language that they can understand. So often I'm helping my clients with that. I work with a nutritionist, and so she's often talking to people in her field, and that switch to the ordinary patient that she's trying to help, or client, she can't help it. She'll go off into how glucose interacts with the blood or something like that. And it's just about helping them create plainer English and make it more simple, make it actually sometimes a lot of the time she didn't need to say so much to get the point across. Sometimes using a metaphor is better.
Sometimes it depends who you're writing for, doesn't it? But sometimes people don't need all that background knowledge that you have. And I know we've chatted about this before, haven't we, the curse of knowledge.
So that's one of those really funny things, isn't it, that you can know too much somehow. Can know too much that you actually cannot speak to people who don't come from your field, who don't have that knowledge. And you hear it so much. Like if you listen to Radio 4, I don't know how many times it's happened to you where it's like, why are they talking about this theory? I don't know about this theory. Suddenly they're just making an assumption that their listeners will understand. Or you watch a gardening show and they start using Latin words for the flowers, and you're like, how am I going to ask the shop assistant in B&Q where this flower is?
And sometimes when we're so immersed in a subject, and I find this as well, and even though I'm constantly thinking about this issue for my clients, often you need a second pair of eyes, don't you, to help you see where where you haven't filled in the links for people, or you haven't explained what this is, and it can just be really helpful to have someone else looking at it for you.
And it really, really, really matters. It's I find for my clients, so some are, you know, they're in social enterprise or they're looking to have an impact on their community. And it's, for example, I just looked at something and it was a questionnaire, and she's used to working with people who are coming to her for help. But this time she was going to people who hadn't asked for help. And the way she had couched her questionnaire, it ended up, it's so funny, like it would have worked perfectly in the situation where people are coming to you for help, but when you're actually going to people and offering help, it right. would have just created yeah. a lot of, it would have caused them to have their backs up against the wall and saying, oh, but you're saying I'm not very good.
You know. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And she just not noticed, she just not seen it. She just, you know, it was all, the intention was good, but just very subtly, it would have, you know, just subtle changes made the difference. And actually it really paid off. She was saying that the group she ended up sharing this questionnaire to really studied the words. Their English was not their first language for a lot of them, and so actually they really paid attention, they really wanted to understand what she was asking them. And the way we rephrased everything just created a much more amicable atmosphere. They were just so much more willing to participate and contribute ideas. And that was what we wanted. But she realised if she had stuck with the questionnaire without sending it to me, it could have gone very, very differently.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I think there's so much around context, isn't there? And, you know, which is why it's so important that you know the situation of what you're proofreading and the client situation and the people that are going to be reading it in the business. And yeah, it's all part of the work, yeah. isn't it? And I think it's sometimes really... when we're writing something, we're really in the weeds. And yeah, it's coming out of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really hard as a proofreader. You never really get much background, to be honest. We try to ask a lot of questions, but I just find, I don't know how you find it, that my clients are so busy and they think they've given me a lot of background, but I'm just sort of grasping at a few things they've told me and trying to make it work. And anyone out there who wants to use a proofreader, please give a lot of background. It helps.
Yeah, the more, that's great. Yeah, the more background you can give to your proofreader, the better.
Yeah,
things like sending website links, or so that we can do a bit of background digging to see all that kind of thing is great, isn't it? So, I mean, you've mentioned a few things, types of things that you proofread. What would you say the most common documents that you proofread, or what type, to just give people a flavour of all the different things that a proofreader can look at or proofreading can?
Yeah. So my week ranges in terms of materials. So I do the obvious things, manuscripts, and sometimes I'll look at the design version of a manuscript. A lot of times I'm looking at Canva, posts for social media, stories, things for Facebook. I do a lot of blogs, newsletters for LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I help people with those. Their newsletters. So there are different types of newsletters people send me. Websites, I do a lot of websites, and with website proofreading it's actually quite in depth because you're checking for the links, you're making sure everything is consistent, you're looking at all the elements, fonts and everything. Yeah, I think that's quite a lot. Posters, I do a lot of posters. Yeah. I look at funding bids. The range is quite wide.
Well, yeah, huge, a wide range of things to look at then. Yeah. And well, a couple of questions then. What are the most common errors you see? And that kind of another part to that question, are there different errors in different types of text that you're reading? And I'm just thinking, you know, for people, if they're listening to this, if perhaps you could share a couple of the most common errors that you see, it might help them to then go away and know what to look for in their own work. And I mean, something that I often suggest if I'm working with clients just for a few sessions, but they're hoping to, they want to go on and write more independently, is that they do develop a kind of checklist for their own blind spots. So there's a kind of checklist of things that you look out for when you're proofreading for people.
I don't really like to tell people or correct them too much. I want them to feel confident, and I don't want them to feel, I guess I don't feel comfortable offering that kind of advice. It's just when we talk over my changes, I will suggest things like the issue of readers, focusing, simplifying sentences. I do notice that they try, I'm not giving feedback, but they treat it as feedback and they do try and improve their writing.
Yeah.
And they'll say to me, oh, Nasreena, I really tried to shorten my sentences this time, you know, but I don't see myself as a coach or a writing coach. And I really like people's styles and I don't think there's one right way. Like I just want people to write and feel good. And it's our jobs to help them make it a little bit more comprehensible to the reader.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that thing about giving feedback, I suppose, I mean, I do that because I'm, you know, also a writing coach, but I mean, different editors have different styles, don't they? Some and different clients want different things. So some will literally just want the kind of track changes in Word so that they can go in and make those changes.
Mm-hmm.
But some do want a bit more of that explanation so that they can then think about incorporating that into their future work. And I'm exactly the same as you. I always, you know, say it's not that you need to do something one way or another. You know, to me, language is about choice. Mm. And I see my job as letting people know what the, you know, what the choices are and what kind of impact that's going to have on the reader. And then it's up to them. Ultimately, it's always their writing. So
yeah.
I would never send something back with track changes where I've just changed it, but I haven't let them know that I've changed it that I want them to have ownership of it.
Yeah.
As well. So I totally agree with you on that. Yeah. And, you know, it does take longer to add in those explanations of, oh, I've done this because X, Y, Z, or, you know, I've removed this here. You might want to, I always couch it in that way. You know, you might want to think about this because this is what it's going to mean. You might want to shorten this sentence. It's a bit unwieldy, or, you know, just kind of stylistic explanations like that. And of course, that does take longer. And if you're going to pay for an editor or proofreader who does that, then it's going to take longer as well, because that's it's going to be more costly, isn't it? But it depends how you like to work, or if you're not interested in thinking about the language, you just want it to be good, that's not something you want to develop, that's fine as well, you know.
I think I don't feel it matters so much with the kind of nonfiction texts that I deal with. They're just concerned about impact, and they just want to make sure it's hitting home and that their voice is there. But with nonfiction, we don't think of it as having style, but there is a style.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you know, with you know, in nonfiction books, or, you know, whether it's a marketing piece, anything like that, isn't it? Yeah.
What you were saying about the track changes and giving them feedback, I've actually found that after a few times they don't want it anymore. They're just like, just Nasreen, just do it for me, and then and I don't feel comfortable. I will tell them, look, I have made like quite a significant change here and here, and they give me the space to explain, just so that my guilt is you know, I can just sort of go away with a clear conscience that I've, you know, done the right thing, you know. But on the whole, yeah, it does get to a point where I have got too much liberty, I think, sometimes. But, you know, it's really you know, it's really important. I think what I used to guide me when I'm helping people with their writing or just doing proofreading is really recognize their voice. And we talk about the voice, and we talk about tone of voice, and there's all these terms for it in whatever sector you work in, but it really matters, because the people I work with, they are really good at creating videos, and they're very well known, so they might not be posting all the time, but they do videos, and people know their voice, or they work a lot in their communities and people have heard them speak. And so it's really important that their writing aligns with how they sound. And I allow that. So for example, there's one client, and she speaks in statements. She speaks very intentionally and purposefully, and when she writes like this, so it sort of looks like a list, but it works for her. And so I try to keep it in a I keep it like that because I know then the people who are who end up following her and reading about her will hear her voice very clearly in that. And then I've got another one, she talks breathlessly, you know, she just speaks so quickly, but then every time there's a caveat, that's when she pauses, and so I'm really jargon speak, that's where I put the M dash, you know.
So
I guess what I am doing is applying a style, but I'm really trying. It's not, like you say, it's not about right and wrong. It's just about what really works for that person and how they sound and their style, and everyone's got their own style, not just their writing style. For a lot of clients, it's about making their writing sound like the way they speak.
Yeah, and this is so interesting, isn't it? I mean, I think sometimes people have this idea that editors and like proofreaders, we're all kind of, you know, it's all about rules and you've got to do it this way and you've got to do it that way. And I just think that's such a myth. I think, you know, I haven't met any editors and proofreaders who are, it's about knowing what the rules are so that you can kind of break them and play with them. And it's totally about people's styles.
Yeah. And what you say is, what you mentioned is just so, I think it's a bit of a stumbling block for people using proofreaders. I think they feel we're going to change things, they're going to lose it's going to lose its authenticity. They want help, but they're worried it will end up being too polished, maybe even posh. They don't say these things, but I sense that's what they think is going to happen. It's just going to be full of semicolons that they don't understand. I mean, he really uses it. The semicolon, you know. I mean, they do. That's wrong of me to say, but it's just one of those things that people are confused about. So I think they feel they won't recognise the writing after it's gone to a proofreader. And I think I'm often, when I have those initial conversations with people, I'm often trying, without addressing it directly, assuring them that I will protect their work, protect their message. And if anything, my job is just to enhance their voice.
Make it
clearer, make it far more impactful by taking out just a few errors, you know, those unnecessary errors, the distractions.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, well, that's fascinating. Do you know what? I could talk about this all day. I don't want to take up too much of your time, Natalie. So, something that I ask all my guests that come on, what book are you reading at the moment, or what book would you recommend to listeners?
Okay, so I finally, I've been sorting out my website for ages, and I finally came across this book. It's called The Website Handbook, Plan and Create a Website That Attracts Leads and Makes Sales, and it's by Jude and Chris Wharton. So they're a couple, and they've created this really fantastic step-by-step book about how to create a website if you're an entrepreneur. And you if you want to do it yourself, maybe you can afford someone to do it for you. But if you like to have control, and I like to have control over my stuff, to be honest, I'm not very good at delegating. This is so good. So even if you think you know about websites, I think it's really worth going through this because they help you apply all the things you learn when you're an entrepreneur, like how to define your ideal client, how to fit it, you know, think about your vision, like all these things that you're trying to that you've learned to use in your business, they help you then translate it into a website. And I think that's really, it's been really useful to me, and it's just helped me know that I'm on track, I think, more than anything. It's a small book, but very valuable.
I will be looking that one up, because it's the kind of thing that I wish I'd had a couple of years ago when I was trying to build my website, but I'm always going back to my website and forever tweaking. So I think to have that information all in one place would be really useful. Okay, and so if people are listening to this and they think they'd like to work with you, where can people find you?
So my website is Nazanen, so it's Nazanen, editorialservices.com. And they can also get in touch by Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook. You'll find me in those major platforms.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Lizzie.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. Take care.
If you enjoyed this episode, the key takeaways from me were that having documents proofread can really give business owners confidence to get them out into the world. Whatever editing you're looking for, there's someone out there who can help.
and that there are plenty of editors who may have skills in more than one area, and also that different editing professionals use various different names. Anyway, doesn't really matter about the technical terms so much, but the important thing is to talk to your editor or proofreader and see what exactly is included in their service, what you want from the service, and the different way that we approach editing means that you may find someone that fits the needs that you have for your business, which wouldn't suit another person. So don't forget that many editing professionals will show you sample edits or offer to do a sample edit for you so that you can understand your approach. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode, and I look forward to chatting to you next time. Take care now. This episode is sponsored by my blogging course for coaches, consultants, and educators, now live on the Course Creators platform Udemy and available at special offer to podcast listeners. Follow the link in the show notes and use the code BloggingCoursePod. If you've got anything you'd like me to talk about on the show, you know someone you'd like me to interview, or perhaps you'd like to be a guest, send me a DM on Instagram at Dr. Lizzie Tangi or email me Lizzie@lizzietangi.com.